If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are in the Daenerys 5 of A Storm of Swords. Matt, how are you?
Hey man, I am good. You know, Jimmy and I sometimes, we always talk a little bit before the podcast, you know. God, man, sometimes we just have to catch up on a lot. There's a lot going on in the world, right?
Yeah,
It's good. Yeah. It always gets us in, like, gets the juices flowing, you know, because work sucks, you know,
media sucks,
a lot of this stuff sucks, but you know what is fun is sitting down and talking A Song of Ice and Fire.
It's a welcome distraction. I mean, I'm definitely an escapist with reading, and I do not apologize for that. I think it's great to go to other worlds. I've been reading Rune Lords by David Farlane, which was released, I think, in like 2000 something. We'll go with that. 2000 something. And it's an epic fantasy. And David Farlane actually is one of the people like Brandon Sanderson looks up to. So it's been a lot of fun to dive back into that like late 90s, early 2000s epic fantasy. Just spree. Like so many things came out in the 90s and the early 2000s. And I'm having fun with it, dude. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think there's some really cool magic and some consequence there. Some stuff even similar to A Song of Ice and Fire in some vein. But I got to tell you, Matt, every time I read something, it becomes more and more evident to me personally why A Song of Ice and Fire succeeded. Yeah, it's just different. It's just different.
Hey, I just saw, by the way, the Emmy nominations just
Six.
Went.
Yeah.
Just went up. Man, The Penguin.
Cleaning House,
like 24 nominations. They said it's like one of the most ever. It is not the most ever is Game of Thrones season 8. You know, but fair. I guess of all of the season,
but...
of all of the, but a lot of it's like visual effects and everything. You
sure.
Know? Yeah, it's crazy. But man, HBO absolutely cleaned house once again.
Yeah, HBO knows what they're doing, it seems. I watched Rehearsal recently on HBO. I thought it was the best reality TV show I've ever seen in my entire life. And I saw that House of the Dragon season 2 was nominated for about, I think it was 6 Emmys. So it's costumes, hairstyling, makeup, prosthetic makeup, intro title design, and special visual effects. That is down from last season 1. Season 1 had 8 nominations.
Yeah, there was really no cast nominations.
No, there wasn't. Now, there are there's other awards out that are
right,
doing
like
nominations. Yeah, Emma Darcy is on that list. So,
yeah. But actually, I should say that The Penguin was like 24, Severance was 27.
Banger.
Yeah, Banger. White Lotus is up there. So, yeah. Just real quick, man. I mean, you look at some of these. I haven't watched The Penguin yet.
I'm surprised you haven't watched it.
I know,
the superhero guy.
I know, and I love the Batman.
What are you doing?
Well, I was kind of waiting for it to finish.
Win awards?
No, I was waiting for it to finish, and then I got caught up in, you know, some of the other shows.
Severance. What are you being a dad?
Is no, Severance and The Pit, and you know some of these other shows. And so,
is The Pit on there? The Pit better.
The Pit got nominated for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it better.
It got. I'm watching The Bear right now, season four. I think I'm over that show. I think season three and season four just I think it kind of lost its magic. I'm gonna be honest.
I've heard that, but you know, I think you know how I feel. I feel
it's
like
kind of turned into it's kind of turned into a little bit like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like you know like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like especially in the early seasons, like so much of it was just like them just arguing, and that would be like half the episode. And then you get to like the fun, you know, parts of like, and that's like this, man. It's just like, all right, here we go. And I got to just see them like yelling back and forth for like five more minutes before we actually get to like another plot point. And it also just feels like it's like trying. It knows it's like a really good and artsy, you know, kind of show. And yeah, I don't know, man.
Do you get feeling like, why are we still doing this? Is that what you're saying?
A little bit. Yeah. It's kind of lost some of it for me. And I'm bored. I don't know. Well, I mean, I loved it. I loved seasons one and two. Season three had some like season three was kind of like half the episodes were good, half weren't. And then I'm just like, I don't know.
Well, I know you're a big Stranger Things fan. The fifth season got a trailer and that season four was like, what, 10 years ago at this point? Like, how long has it been since Stranger? Does anyone, I mean, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say, does anyone care? People care. But like, is it weird for you? I haven't watched the show. Is it weird for you that it's been, I mean, what, 4 years?
Well, it is kind of weird that they're supposed to be in like high school and whatnot when like, you know, some of the cast members were like, have like now graduate, you know, or like, graduated high school or in college, and you know, and it's just like it's a little weird. It still looks
wait good, though. I wasn't wrong. Season four, oh no, I'm sorry, it started in 2016. I thought for a second season four was 2016. I'm like, that's
season four was a couple years ago,
so it has been 3 years. Assuming is the fifth season coming out this year?
Yeah, Netflix is doing it, and I hope this does not become a trend, by the way, but Netflix is releasing it in like three parts. Which it's just like, are you spacing it out so that you hope people like keep a Netflix subscription? Like, because Netflix is still under the big binge model.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, okay, well, now you can binge this part and then you can come back and watch this part. And then they did that for the last season of it too, where it's like, okay, you can watch some of it and then more of it came out. And it's just like, why not just do week by week?
So what I see here, and this is obviously could be wrong because it's being sourced just from the general Google thing. It says like November 26th, and then it looks like almost two parts, like a month later at the end of the year, they're releasing the back half, but that could be wrong. But yeah, so it's been like legit almost 4 years since season four. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I'm just, yeah, I think it'll be good. I'm excited for it. So that'll be good. You know, like Duncan Egg, you think, is it going to get nominated for Emmys? I don't know. What's it going to have to go against? The Pit season two will be out that it'll go against.
Yeah. Such different audiences, though.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, I'm looking right now just at some of these Emmys. Lead actor in a drama series. Paradise. I've never even seen that. Slow Horses.
I did. I told you about it. I told Paradise. You about it.
That's right.
Yeah. Slow Horses.
I mean, it's Gary Oldman. So, I mean, I'm sure. Those are freaking phenomenal. But then it's like Pedro Pascal, The Last of Us, Adam Scott, Severance, Noah Wyle, The Pit.
Heavy hitters, man.
I feel like Severance is going to clean house. I think The Pit will definitely take some, but
yeah. Yeah. I think The Pit was kind of a shock to everyone. Cause like,
but I guess, look at some of these and it's just like House of the Dragon wasn't nominated. I mean,
so let me ask you this, to bring it back to A Song of Ice and Fire a little bit here. I mean, do you think there was just an outright best performance ever on season two of House of the Dragon? Like, we like season two. Me and you think that the show's fine at this point. A lot of people think it's over.
Well, there's still like acting is totally different than like the script you're given.
Yeah, I agree. But like, I'm trying to think back, like, for instance, Patty in season one, not getting an Emmy. I'm pissed.
That was ridiculous. That was
it's robbery. But is there something like that in season two? I mean, Kristen Cole, I thought was pretty great in season two personally, but
what's her name? Eve Best.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That was pretty good, man.
Aegon's actor, I thought did a pretty nice job. I mean, so now I'm thinking back, everybody did a great job.
I think what kind of screwed House of the Dragon a little bit is and I think this happens because I see this in video games, you know, all the time, which is what I know way more about.
End of the year releases.
Yeah, it's also, and like early in the year releases. Because technically the way the Emmy, you know, because I think the Emmys were like being announced as season two was coming out, so it actually start kind of clicks into like that qualifying whatever year or whatever. Mm. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe maybe when you look at it.
I mean, also,
I didn't really like The Last of Us season two, but I also didn't like The Last of Us Part Two, the game.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess when I look at that, I don't think that there's anyone on there that isn't awesome.
But I think if you also asked me, was House of the Dragon season two better than Severance season two? No.
No, it wasn't. No.
No. Like Severance season two, man, it was.
I mean, really honestly, good. I like The Pit more than House of the Dragon at this point right now. I know that's like heresy, but like
I work in that field, so it's like, yeah, some of it was a little over the top, but Teresa, I mean, she was an ER nurse. She was an ER nurse for like 8-10 years. I mean, she loved it. So,
well, I went on my rant about how like refreshing it was to see a show that isn't going to take 2 years to come out. I mean, that is a legit like pro, right? Like that's a positive. Right. Like now, what if season two comes out and it's terrible and they rushed it? Then I'll recant that. But I have hopes that it's going to be really good. So I think House of the Dragon season three has the most potential out of the first three seasons. So
I think House of the Dragon season two was better than The Last of Us season two. I can say that. Hmm. So if you just look at drama series, The Pit and Severance, yeah, I don't know about that. Those are pretty good. White Lotus, I'm not a fan, but it's a big deal. Slow Horses, The Diplomat, Paradise, you really liked. And then Andor season two was freaking amazing. So
yeah, I've heard it was great. Yeah.
Andor season one was great, but Andor season two was like amazing.
To be clear,
it's not going to win best drama over Severance or The Pit, but Andor deserves. Man, it might win writing. It could win writing. Dan Gilroy, yeah.
Yeah, to be clear, I also like House of Dragons season two over Paradise. I just think Paradise is a really fun show. The finale was kind of a stinker. And some of the writing was a little suspect, but overall I like the show quite a bit. It's also it's written by one of my favorite current authors, Stephen Markley, who I love.
Yeah.
So I was kind of impartial to that show to begin with, but or I should say partial, right? I'm biased. Yeah. How about that? I'll stop using words I can't remember how to use. So I still think House of Dragon was better than Paradise. Like I wouldn't have put Paradise up for an award personally, even though I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, House of Dragon season two, man, no big Emmys.
Yeah, I this is kind of going into the fact that like so much of the online discourse is now centered around George hating the show and stuff. I'm just trying to prepare you, Matt. I think it's going to be a tough time covering season three of House of the Dragon. I think it's going to be very taxing because season two was pretty taxing. Not because I didn't like the show, but because people, you know, had their pitchforks and I don't know. I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about covering it, but
yeah,
we will see.
They said it's the first time. They said I think it's the first time it was never nominated for like best drama, outstanding drama.
Yeah.
The only season that wasn't was Game of Thrones season one.
Okay. Which is, yeah.
Absurd. Like,
yeah. Well, back then, you know, it's there's like, we're not going to nominate a fantasy show.
Right. Yeah. We're ridiculous. These awards.
I feel like I'm crazy. I feel like I'm losing my mind, dude. I'm not even saying it needs to be nominated, but just the things that I've seen. We get some comments in our videos sometimes that are just on like, YouTube. Yeah, I'm going to have to stop because
it's dude, I'm telling you, because I'm posting a bunch of Superman content right now and TikTok and YouTube are completely different vibes.
But I just, dude, I've watched a lot of bad television, like a lot. House of Dragons season two is not bad television. I'm not saying it was perfect. There's a problem. No. I have problems with it. But like the reaction to me is just like so overblown. And it's disheartening to me, I think, to see that it's still going, like just seeing some of the comments that we get and stuff. You know, people are free to express themselves however they want, of course, but you know, whenever you see just pretty much vitriol, you're just like, okay, I guess I'm one of the few people that still like this show, which is fine. Yeah, you know, I don't need any help, I guess, but
yeah,
we'll rave it on in season three. We'll see.
And Dunkin' Egg might be such a big refresher that it gets us back into it. Like I think Andor was that for Star Wars, where it's like, man, Star Wars has not been in a good place. And now Andor season two came out and it was so good that it's like, it's a nice refresher. And maybe Dunkin' Egg will be that.
like you and I don't think that it's in a bad place. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like everyone else is saying how dead it
right.
is. And I know, you and I are like, oh, no, it's good. Like we're fine. It's okay. Not everything's yeah. gonna be perfect. I just think that it's so black and white.
Right.
But yeah, I hope Dunkin' Egg does well. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay. Let's dive into today's chapter, which is Daenerys 5. And that is let me get it pulled up here.
Marine Whitebeard.
Yeah, Whitebeard. Marine is enclosed by a great wall with hundreds of defenders to guard it. Daenerys's huge army consists mostly of freed slaves. They're eating up the surrounding lands. Daenerys realizes that she must claim the city before the army starves. Aware that storming the walls will cost her a great deal, Daenerys sends strong Belwas to dispatch the hero of Marine. Belwas kills Osnak Zopal, but the city still stands strong. Brown Ben Plum reveals a way into the city through the sewers. Daenerys' dragons seem to like Brown Ben, and they perch on his shoulder when he visits. Daenerys finds herself drawn to Daario Naharis, and she keeps thinking of his blue eyes. Later, she goes off with Artistan and Missandei to visit the camps, and there she is attacked by Miro of Braavos. Artistan kills the Titan's bastard with his staff alone, and when Daenerys reaches the pavilion, Jorah is shocked to learn that a squire with a staff could defeat Miro with such ease. Artisan reveals that he is actually a knight, and Jorah finally recognizes him as Barristan the Bold. Barristan apologizes for deceiving her and swears his sword in her service. Jorah warns her not to accept the man, for he went over to Robert after the Trident. Barristan reveals to Jorah that he has spied on her behalf of Varys and the small council in hopes of gaining a royal pardon. Jorah pleads that he did only so at first, but he has been loyal to her since the birth of the dragons. Daenerys disgusted dismisses them both. She does not want them in her service anymore. When she wonders where to send them, where to send them, she suddenly has an idea. And this is somewhat similar to the show. The show, they don't really do any of the Artisan Whitebeard stuff. He just kind of shows up and then he kills like the spider, right? That's going to attack her or the scorpion or whatever. And then it's just immediately, oh, it's Barristan. And then we get into, you know, the conversation about Jorah, and then we go there from there. So it's pretty similar, but Jimmy, this is actually kind of a long chapter. A lot of these Daenerys chapters are always usually pretty long, even though it's actually long. There's not really there is stuff that happens, but that's a
pretty big chapter, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. But so, I mean, let's dive in. Let's do some big takeaways here. And, you know, what do you think?
Yeah. Obviously Jorah getting exposed here is ironic, because I do think like right now Jorah's trying to give her good advice and being like, Marine's not where we should be. We should be saving up all this stuff to go over to Westeros, which I actually think is the right call. But Jorah gets exposed here, and we get to see the reveal of Barristan the Bold, which is always a big favorite of mine. Barristan's probably my favorite supporting character in the entire series. I mean, I would have to think about it, but it's either him or Hallen Reed at this point. And at least Barristan shows up. Hallen Reed, that we know of, has not showed up yet. The other thing about this chapter, and one of my more favorite characters to ponder that is really just books, is Ben Plum, and the fact that he has dragon blood and the dragons seem to like him, which is really cool. He's a descendant of Aelaena Targaryen, he's pretty far down on that that tree, but eventually someone crosses the narrow sea and then gives birth. So a lot of pretty cool characters, and who knew that setting up Marine at this point with Ben Plum, the second son's being all this, Daario would be Daenerys's essential like new plot for the next 1500 pages, and we've been stuck in Marine for 10 years. It's kind of the beginning of it all, and I think a lot of what Daenerys ends up feeling as a ruler ties back to this moment and being betrayed by Jorah, and also having Barristan here, who's going to, as we will see, give her a lot of information about Rhaegar and start to give her more of an idea of what her family was in Westeros when they ruled. So huge, huge, huge chapter to set up things that are, seeds that'll be planted that are going to take hold and grow as we follow Danny and Meereen.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of simple. You know, we always like to pull out those connections in between like chapter to chapter. And so last time we talked about Bran, right? And Bran was walking through this gate into a new world, essentially, right? Where he walks under the Weirwood door and then he walks right into the land of Always Winter, you know, beyond the wall. And that's going to be his plot point until we're still there, right? We're still, that's where we're still at. And essentially that's kind of what's happening with Daenerys, is this is going to be her next big, huge arc. For a while is Marine, what's going on with the slavers? And she knows we were walking through and she wants to stare at them one by one, right? You know, very similar to what we saw in the show. And then ultimately, yeah, we're going to go right into the Jorah Mormont's betrayal is finally coming in, right? She enters a new city and now this life that she had before with Jorah that we've known this entire time, right? He's been her ally. He's been the one right there with her. Now she's going to have to break away from that to some degree and move into this new thing. It's very similar to what we just did with Bran, right?
Yeah.
Bran quite literally is leaving the I'm Bran Stark. And now I'm entering to this land of Always Winter where I'm going to go become the Three-Eyed Crow.
Yeah. And
they're very paralleled, really.
Yeah, and they're both coming of age, right? Daenerys is extremely young at this point, younger than we would probably like her to be in the books. That's one of the benefits of the show, being aged up, obviously. But we have to also think about the fact that Dario's talked about here and how she's attracted to him. And in many ways, I think she gets pushed even more into this direction with this betrayal of Jorah. Because, you know, she's feeling super betrayed. She's feeling isolated. Also, Jorah's being a creep towards her. And even though she's rejecting his advances, obviously, because he is the biggest creep, I think. Well, Peter Baelish is probably the biggest creep, but he's up there for sure. I think it reminds her that she has this big hole in her life of romance and of desire and love. And Dario, again, is sitting right there. So she's looking for who she can trust. She cannot trust the people she thought had her back. And it kind of ends up pushing her, I think, a little bit more towards Dario in the long run.
Yeah, I agree. And even the last line of the chapter, which is something they didn't really explore in the show. And I'll read it here. So this is when Ser Barristan rose stiff and slow. For the first time, he looked his age. Where shall we go, your grace? To hell, to serve King Robert. Dany felt hot tears on her cheeks. Mm-hmm. Drogon screamed, lashing his tail back and forth. The others can have you both. Go away forever, both of you. The next time I see your faces, I'll have your traitor's heads off. She could not say the words, though. They betrayed me, but they saved me. But they lied. You go, my bear, my fierce, strong bear. And what will I do without him? And the old man, my brother's friend, you go where? And then she knew, well, where whores go. But no, I'm just joking. But which, by the way, is a Tyrion chapter next. So maybe George, you know, tiny little just funny thing there, coincidence probably. But you know, the show didn't really go into her being as upset with Barristan because they kind of skipped over the Whitebeard stuff, right? So
yeah,
because he just stabs it, and then it's like, hey, it's Barristan, and he immediately becomes her face, and then he's the one who reveals it later. Whereas here it is both of them, and she is upset at both of them. And I think that's something that's a little bit better in the book, because she has been with him for a while.
Yeah. I think also for like the different mediums, you kind of have to do it instantaneously, because the Watcher is going, hey, we know him. He was just with Joffrey, he threw a sword down. And yeah, you could give him another name, but like that's not that. It doesn't have that much of a weight of a reveal once it actually happens. Whereas in a book, you know, we can't see them. We can get the descriptions. We probably should have maybe guessed at that point, but it can actually have a bigger like pop, I guess.
Well, okay. Here's a question for you. And we don't know how long it's been that he's been kicked out of Westeros, but how has it taken Jorah Mormont so long to figure out that Artisan is Barristan Selmy?
Well, I think Jorah's been gone for quite a bit. So I think that's actually it. He just has been gone for so long, and Barristan has aged. And
what if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Another thing in Westeros, and we talk about this a lot whenever the commoners come to see Ned when he's sitting as the Hand in place of Robert, and they think he is Robert because, mm-hmm. you know, this is not a place that has Facebook. This isn't a place that has easy travel, especially for the poor folk. Most of them will never even see their kings, their queens or princesses. So there's a good chance that Jorah might have only seen Barrison a handful of times. And he probably was in armor at tourneys and such. Right. So I think that it's actually pretty feasible that Jorah wouldn't be able to recognize him, and plus all the time that has been that has passed. I'm going to do a quick Google and see how long Jorah was exiled for.
That's okay, because I'm gonna bring a. There's a quote here that kind of while you do that, there's a quote that kind of it's talking about something else, but it ultimately kind of indicates what's going on here. Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit earlier in the chapter, kind of maybe in like the middle of it, and it's when she's talking to Daario and Grey Worm, and this is Daario Naharis gave Grey Worm a smile. Perhaps the Unsullied should wield the axes. Boiling oil feels like no more than a warm bath to you, I've heard. This is false. Grey Worm did not return the smile. These ones do not feel burns as men do, yet such oil blinds and kills. The Unsullied do not fear to die, though. Give these ones rams, and we will batter down these gates or die in an attempt. You would die, said Brown Ben. At Young Kai, when he took command of the Second Sons, he claimed to be a veteran of 100 battles. Though I will not say I fought bravely in all of them. There are old sellswords and bold sellswords, but no old bold sellswords, which I think is kind of ultimately like a hint that Artisan, you know, is Whitebeard is, you know, because he is Barristan the Bold, and that, you know, he is also old. So that's ultimately, while he is talking, while George is talking about something else, that's that little foreshadowing to the reveal that is coming. And so it is kind of a cool little thing that George does, which is, again, why we always say, man, you really have to pay attention to everything he says, because that's why that's in there.
Oh yeah. And it's so good. Like,
but it's nothing to do. He's not even mentioned in the group.
No. But it shows you go back and you reread. This is why we love the reread. And also just a playful, like almost rhyme scheme of that. That's pretty great. It's pretty sick. By the way, Jorah was exiled at this point, I think, for about 4 to 5 years, by the way. Right. It was right after
It's certainly been a little bit since he's seen him.
Yeah, it's a Greyjoy rebellion. Ned goes out to Bear Island, realizes that he's gone. I actually had been under the assumption that it was longer than that. But yeah, I think it's about 4 to 5 years. Doing some quick maths on the AC dates. So
yeah,
forgive me if I'm wrong.
For sure.
Yeah, that foreshadowing is pretty good, man. I love that. And that's why George is the GOAT for me. Like, that's the kind of foreshadowing I like.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, again, a lot to break down in this chapter, so we can kind of tie into it. Another thing that just kind of, struck me as interesting, right, is they keep talking about the others here, but like, does Daenerys really know what those are? I mean, it's just such a popular saying, like, yes, the others take you, because she's like not even raised in Westeros.
Well, she was around Westeros. I mean, she was obviously very young, but we also know that she was around Illyrio, who probably was raising her in the customs and the folklore of Westeros more so than Essos, right? Because that's her. She's probably asking questions as a kid about her home. And I think that the others being such a popular phrase, at some point she heard that folklore. Like, I think
it's just it's just the others take you. And then it is said as well. Jorah says it too. He says it earlier when he figured out what's going on. He said, "The others take you, Selmy." Ser Jorah flung his long sword to the carpet. "Khaleesi, it was only at the start before I came to know you, before I came to love. You know, do not say that word." She backs away from him. But, and it's just kind
of. Well, I mean,
just,
she might even just be mocking him there, right?
Right.
Others but take it's just, you.
But maybe it's just like, yeah, you know, if she grew up in Essos.
I think between Illyria and Jorah, I feel like,
right. Or maybe she gets it from her brother Viserys.
Yeah.
Who was saying it.
Yeah. And was a little older. Yeah. I think that's possible. I think at first glance, it could seem like it doesn't make sense, but I think there's enough there to kind of justify it.
Yeah.
Dude, the Targaryen lineage tree is so insane. Like, I just looking at Ben Plum and I'm just like, there's like four, like the fact that George did all this stuff. And I know a lot of it is just like, this guy was here and then he died and he did this, but
right. And it was certainly expanded upon later.
Yeah. Dear God. I mean, there's so much here. Like, I'm looking at Lyanna Targaryen, who Ben Plum has descended from. And she was born on 150 AC. Elena was the third daughter of the youngest child of King Aegon III Targaryen and Queen Daenerys of House Velaryon. She had two older brothers, Daeron and Baelor, and two older sisters, Dana and Rhaena. Elena's most cherished possession was a dragon's egg whose stony shell showed the same colors as her hair.
Yeah. Well, actually, just got me. What you said there just got me thinking about something I just wanted to look up. Do we have any idea when Fire and Blood Part 2 is coming out?
Never, dude. It's never coming out. It's never coming out.
You don't think so?
No. No, I do not. In fact, I think if it does come out, it'll probably be a large amount from Ilio and Linda, which I'm not super keen on. But
well, I guess my question is, if like Ilio, if they're working on it with him,
dude, if he announces it, so you know me, I know you're not the biggest fan. I love Fire and Blood Part 2. I would want that. I love the first part of it. But if he announces a release date for Fire and Blood 2, at this point, I think people will lose their ever loving. Like, I think that might be it. I think it might be dunzo. He can't do that.
Maybe he needs some of that stuff. Maybe he needs some more of the expanded Targaryen lore to come out first before Winds of Winter.
I would be thrilled, so. Matt. I'd be thrilled. My favorite author.
I would too. I mean, thrilled. Don't get me wrong. I didn't not like Fire and Blood. I just prefer World of Ice and Fire more.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's fine. Yeah, that,
but I will say I have actually been picking up the Reign of the Dragon, which is the big
coffee table book
version of it, and I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, I've come around a little bit on it more because I just like that version.
I don't think it's as easy for people to pick up and just like read it, right? Because of the way that it's structured. But I really enjoy the fact that George in that this stage of his career and this stage of that series was able to write a, you know, false history book in world. I just think that that's awesome. I love it. And it's also fairly unique in the sense of like the fantasy genre. Obviously we have the Silmarillion. A lot of people call Fire and Blood the Grimmarillion, which is hilarious, but not many authors have went as far to create an entire history book for their series. In fact, I can only think of like two. So
yeah, I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah. So, but if Fire and Blood 2 were to come out, I mean, I think what I've heard him say is that he needs to do Winds of Winter, and then it's Fire and Blood 2, possibly some Duncan Egg novellas, and then, of course, Dream of Spring. Like, I think that's what I've heard him say. I'd have to look up the quote, but it seemed like Winds of Winter was first and then Fire and Blood Part 2.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's dive into some other things of this chapter. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, she's going to send them both off, and, you know, she's dealing with this betrayal of Jorah Mormont. Ultimately, I feel like she's also just because she's been with him way longer. That's, and we see that is who she's ultimately more upset with is Jorah. Oh,
yeah.
Because she felt like he's been her right hand man this entire time, because he has been, whereas opposed to Barristan, who's just been in there for a little bit.
Yeah. And do you think she's as justified to not like Barristan here, or do you think he's just getting a bit of the after? Because, like, I agree, I think Jorah,
it's probably in the wake of the whole deal.
Yeah,
because Barristan's only been with her for a little bit. But she probably doesn't feel very trustworthy of him, because she might feel like he's an assassin, even though.
You know. Sure. And also.
Still, so, I mean, he still could be sent there even after everything that's gone down. He could be sent there to take her out or something.
Yeah. And she now has to question everything. I mean, it really does a number on her, doesn't it? But Danny, eventually Barristan comes back, and then she's able to confer with him and learn a lot of things about her family. And there's no way. By the end of this night, right after this chapter, she goes to bed. There's no way she doesn't start thinking about the fact that she can learn more about her heritage and her father and everybody in her family on Barristan. So it's almost like a gamble. Like, is he going to betray me? But he also has knowledge that maybe only he would know, serving so close to the king. So yeah. I think that out of both of them, Barristan has to be the one that you would take back. Though, like I said, Jorah was not giving her bad advice going into all this. I mean, he was actually, I think he was on the right, but he's also a creeper. So.
Yeah. And she goes, and she goes in and, you know, it sort of explains that when he's asking her, like, why are you here? If Robert sent you here to kill me, why did you save my life? He served the usurper. He betrayed Rhaegar's memory and abandoned Viserys to live and die in exile. Yet if he wanted me dead, he need only have stood aside. I want the whole truth now on your honor as a knight. Are you the usurper's man or mine? Which, by the way, on your honor as a knight, remember that's when he's telling her the story of Rhaegar and how if I had been more honorable that day, is
and, you know, I'm just sitting here kind of thinking about all this. It feels as if Danny gets a bad rap, and I know, like, a lot of people conflate the ending of the show with the books, but, like, we know that George did not give Dan and Dave the Daenerys mad angle. That was not one of the major points he gave them. And I think if you want to start looking at counterexamples of why she wouldn't go mad, like, a lot of people say, oh, when something bad happens to her, she only responds with, like, fire and blood. I think right here, she easily could have had both of them executed, right?
Easily.
Or at least Jorah, which in the next chapter, she ends up sending him away because he's even more insubordinate, which is crazy. He, like, doubles down next chapter. Well, not next chapter, next Daenerys chapter, he ends up doubling down.
Do you think if maybe Jorah hadn't been so, like, suspicious and calling Barristan out, then Barristan might not have, like, said all this stuff to Daenerys of, like, well, actually he was sent here to spy on you.
I think, yeah, I guess it depends if Barristan was ever going to tell Danny who he was, which would be, by the way, the honorable thing to do.
Right. But I mean, at the same time, it's like, he's been with her for 5 years. We know he stopped spying on her, like, you know, a good while ago. And so, like, they very easily could have just had a conversation, which I think in the show, I'm trying to remember, I think they do. I think they do have a conversation because it's Barristan the whole time.
Yeah.
I have to go back. It's a lot. Yeah. I have to go back, but I'm pretty sure that happens. But that could be the thing. Right? Because Barristan's not sitting here being like, hey, I want to be your number two.
No.
But it's not really until Jorah, like, loses his shit and tries to call him out on everything.
that he has to say, well, I got one trump card here and I'm going to use
it.
Yeah.
If that's how it's going to be, then here's what
Barrison's trying to right old wrongs here.
Exactly. Right? Barrison just wants to serve her because he feels like it's the thing he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And I think he feels a certain type of way about everything that's happened and while he stood by and he feels a little bit disgraced by it, I think. And then getting dishonorably discharged essentially by Joffrey is horrible. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because Barrison would also know that, well, since Robert's been dead, you know, we haven't gotten anything.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So there maybe, you know,
it all comes down to Barrison would have ever wanted to tell her. And I think that I have a suspicion that
he probably one of would his have goal, at some point.
Yeah, was to inform her of her brother and maybe say, hey, a lot of people say Rhaegar was awful, but actually Rhaegar was a good person, right? Your father, however, was mad as all can be. So
yeah,
I'm not sure, but I think Dany shows a lot of mercy here. And even more, we'll talk about it the next time we meet up with her. She shows a lot of mercy here and does not just do fire and blood and do something horrible. You know, she ends up sending him to the sewers and wishing they were, you know, drowning in feces, I guess. But
yeah, because right here, I mean, you look at this whole this whole thing is Jorah, you know, it's talking about like, well, maybe I should have your head essentially. And Jorah says, I can grant that wish. Sir Jorah said darkly, quiet, said Danny, I'll hear him out. And then he says, well, it may be that I must die a traitor's death. If so, I should not die alone.
And dang, then he goes, man.
But it's really all on Jorah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good, that's just such good writing on George, because then it also is like, well, why is he being so aggressive here?
He didn't want anybody
adding to his protection of Danny. So it's much more than just, hey, I don't want to be found out for this whole deal. But it's also this like love that he's building for her, you know, the weird whatever. Ugh. It's like, nobody's my precious, you know, like nobody's gonna, you know, like nobody's gonna take her away from him.
Yeah, it's I think obviously it's for his own survival and for his own personal cover, but it is definitely a little bit of him being jealous as well. I mean, he hates everybody, you know. He's the nice
guy.
And
I will say, hey, you know, real quick, we've talked about some things about season 8. I thought his death in season 8 was great.
Tremendous.
I thought it's one of the better moments of season 8, to be fair. I think, you know, of all the stuff that sucks, I thought Jorah Mormont's death in season 8 was pretty great, like taking the sword right in front of you know, Danny, great. Those are some cool cinematography. Of course, then his actual like funeral was terrible because it's the worst episode in Game of Thrones history.
Overshadowed by that, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just like 5 seconds. So terrible. I mean, that should have been, you could have had like a full episode of that. Like that should have been part of it too. It was like her like losing Jorah and then losing Missandei. Like it was there, but it wasn't turned up enough. They really needed like at least one more episode in between.
How often is it that a television show goes too short? You know, so many, like you're talking about The Bear, and there's a billion examples.
Well, it's the total opposite of House of the Dragon, where House of the Dragon needed a little more action. Season 8, we know, actually needed a little more exposition.
Yeah, we needed probably another whole two seasons, I think. And the crazy thing is, I think people would have been there for it. You know, it's just Dan and Dave decide, whatever. We've been over it 100 times. But yeah, so I think but to comment on that, yeah, I think Jorah's death is amazing, as well as Theon's. I thought Theon's was maybe
if I had to say the best part of season 8, I would say Theon's.
That was the most emotional I was out of all of it. Yeah. Like I felt that to my core, man. And Alfie was a phenomenal actor. What a great job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
rip,
good.
Rip Theon.
So yeah, okay. I think that's pretty good for today's episode. There is more stuff, you know, like Brown Ben Plum and stuff like that. And something for me, my big takeaway from this is, of course, the Barristan Jorah Mormont stuff.
Yeah. And just where Danny's about to be in Meereen and how this scene kind of shapes her.
I think it's a bit before. So this is chapter 57. We don't see Daenerys again until chapter 71.
Yeah. It's
which is the last time we see her in. And again, actually, this whole battle is already over. It's not even on screen. This is like, okay, we're getting ready to go to battle, and then the next thing we see is that the battle's over. So talk about stuff that maybe should have been split up. Maybe a Storm of Swords should have been a little split up.
Nope. Best book ever.
I know what I'm saying. You know what I mean? It's do we need that battle? We lost that battle. So even here, maybe that'd be a great topic. Like even that, you just this jump from Daenerys 5 to Daenerys 6, like maybe that was something when George was writing this. being like, oh man, I got to cut stuff. And it just, you can even hear, maybe you can begin to see it's starting to get away from him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very ambitious, very, very ambitious series. And he had planned to end it in 3 books and then it got expanded 5. We all know the story at this point, but yeah, it's a monster book, but I think it works. The book works. I don't think
it's a phenomenal book. I'm just saying maybe that was a chapter that that'd actually be a great question, because that'd be one he would actually answer.
Yeah.
Like Daenerys 5, this is what happens to Daenerys 6. Like, were you at all ever planning to have that battle? Or was the plan to do this? Because like that's one of the things I think is so great about the Tyrion chapter in Game of Thrones, right? Where he just gets knocked out and wakes up and misses it. Like, I think that's actually a fun, cool, clever way to do it. Because, you know, Tyrion's because the whole time you're gearing up for Tyrion to, you know, he's gonna go fight in this battle, right? And it's like, oh man, you know, he's getting thrown out to the front lines by his father and everything, and then nope.
Yeah, and here's the thing.
I thought that was actually kind of fun.
Yeah, and it was also for budget concerns, right?
Even in the books.
Yeah, which is, well, in the books, he actually rides into battle.
But he's not like he's like fights the whole battle and everything.
Right, but I mean, like, there's actually a scene of the battle, whereas in the show, they just cut it completely.
Yeah.
And they did it for budget reasons, but if you did that today, fandom today would lose their shit. They would lose their shit.
Yeah.
This is so boring. You know, I'm just like, it's wild. Like the change, I think, of attitude since the later seasons. Could you imagine if House of the Dragon, like if they just cut anything?
They're going to have to cut. They've already cut some stuff. They're going to cut some other stuff.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Some tough decisions.
By the way, real quick, right now, and just we'll end here too. Right now, there's a big rumor of like the casting for the Batman stuff. Like, who's going to be the Batman? It's because Superman just came out. And the online fan casting is growing more and more and more. It's like, well, forget about who's going to play Batman in this whole deal. Alfred, Charles Dance, down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that would be freaking amazing.
I would actually watch. I never watch any superheroes. I would watch that.
Michael Caine was great, and Andy Serkis is it, and the Robert Pattinson one. But yeah, Charles Dance as Alfred.
Dude, that'd be legit.
It'd be amazing. Like, it would be. Now I can't even think of anybody else that I thought Jeremy Irons was pretty good too, but yeah.
Start your hashtag now.
Nope. Charles Dance, make it happen. There's nobody else.
That's a great role for him too, ending his career.
Yeah. Oh, it'd just be so good. He would be so perfect for that role.
Charles Dance is the go.
To be fair, Charles Dance is pretty perfect for any role.
Oh, I'll watch anything with him. He could be Batman. I don't care.
He's
78 years old. He's got.
You know, Ian Glenn was Batman.
Really?
In the Titans show, he was really more kind of like Bruce Wayne. It didn't really work. He didn't like put the suit on or anything because he was like Bruce Wayne. More in it, and they did. There was like a Batman scene, but it was like, you know, stunt people and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but it's just like the British accent kind of didn't make it work particularly great. He did a good job, but it was just like his accent didn't work.
All I'm saying is that Charles Dance is 78. Well, Clint Eastwood's 95, so we might have another 15 years of Charles Dance. We have another 20,
30,
40.
50.
Do I hear 60 now?
Yeah, I mean, stem cell research, robotics. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know, CBD. I don't know. There's something. There's some sponsor out there that could.
Seriously. Okay. What are we into next time? As I could pull.
It's Tyrion 7. It's gonna be a banger.
All right. Well, here we go. Well, as always, I want to thank you guys for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 58, Tyrion 7.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelthy providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelthy can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.